Charged by Pope Benedict in 2006 to lead the nation's largest diocese, Toronto Archbishop Thomas Collins is Canada's newest member of the College of Cardinals. At just 65, he is also one of the youngest. Cardinal-designate Collins found time in a hectic pre-consistory schedule to drop by Vatican Radio and speak to Emer McCarthy about the honor and gratitude he feels at being counted among the Pope's closest collaborators and what he sees as the Church's greatest challenges.
Thank you for finding time for us here at Vatican Radio.
I'm very glad to be here.
When did you get in to Rome?
I got in on Monday, just a few days ago.
It's been a very busy few days in the lead up to this weekend.
Very busy. A lot of different celebrations already. Some of the people from Canada have already arrived. We got together on the Tuesday night, and then more will be coming the next day or so.
How big a delegation has accompanied you from Toronto?
I'm not sure exactly, but there'd be over 100 certainly. And then I think when you count people from Edmonton and Western Canada and other places, probably somewhere between 100 and 200 people.
Now, of course, Toronto is, if I'm not mistaken, the biggest archdiocese in Canada.
That's right, yes. About 1.8 million Catholics, about a third of the population of the area the diocese is in.
And you've been there now since 2006.
That's right. I was named in December 2006 and I was installed in January 2007.
So you've been there enough time to make it feel home and to become yes. widely recognized. We saw the reaction of the people of your archdiocese to Pope Benedict XVI's announcement that you were going to be made a cardinal, a member of the College of Cardinals. What was the feedback you got from the people of Toronto?
Well, the people have been very kind. I was amazed that the first day when it was announced, I was sort of having interviews all day long, and people have been writing all kinds of wonderful. I very much appreciate their kindness and their expressions of joy and support as I receive this new mission within the Church.
We can't overlook the fact that you are one of the youngest men to be made cardinal in this particular group of cardinal designate. You are, I'm not mistaken, you're only 65.
That's right. I just turned 65 in January, and in Canada, that means you're eligible for the old age pension. And so I'm very conscious of that. I haven't received my first pension check yet, but I'm aware of that. And at the same time, some of these that, you know, you're very young, and it just all depends on the perspective.
Now, before we start looking at your actual role within the College of Cardinals, perhaps if we take a step back and ask you the journey to this most momentous occasion. A young man decided to enter the priesthood. Bring us a little bit through your past, your history, the journey to this day.
Well, I grew up in a little town called Guelph, Ontario. It's where my family came. Actually, we've been in that area since the 1830s. They came from Drogheda in Ireland. I went to a school there, a Catholic school, and I thought about the priesthood quite a bit because of the example of the wonderful priests in my home parish. They're just so dedicated. They all, in different ways, I had a pastor, sort of an older man who was just a very prayerful man. There was a young priest, Father Newstead, who was very joyful and was really cared every day for the sick and those in need. And so as a young boy and a teenager growing up, I just was very impressed by the example of the priest that I met. And then when I was in high school, one day, Father Newstead, this priest I admired very much for his dedication, he said, "You know, Tom, you should think about becoming a priest." So I had already, he knew, I think I had already been thinking about that. And so I, in due time, when I was able to, I entered the seminary and I was ordained a priest on May the 5th, 1973. So I've been assigned to different things. My superior sent me away to study in Rome. My bishop sent me here for a few years, the 1970s, and then I was sent back in the 1980s to complete the studies, biblical studies at the Biblical Institute and the Gregorian University. I studied the Book of Revelation, especially where I did a doctorate on that.
The apocalypse.
It's
quite
all
an unusual choice.
So people always say, if I look worried, you should look worried. But it's a book of hope, but it's often a book, it's presented as a book of fear. And that's a shame because it really is a book of hope, the sign of the triumph of the Lamb of God over the forces of evil, an encouragement to Christians who are struggling both against the power, the seductive power of materialism, paganism, and also struggling against the threats of persecution. And just as those were the two dangers facing the Christians in the first century when the Apocalypse was written, they are dangers faced still to this day. These are the challenges. In parts of the world, there's a lot of persecution. And I know as Archbishop of Toronto, I meet people, they come from all over the world, and they speak of the suffering of their families back home. But also, of course, in some parts of the world, we have the danger of this kind of materialism. And that's what I think Pope Benedict is speaking of, about the need for a new evangelization.
In fact, you preempted one of my next mm-hmm. questions. Canada is a very particular type of Catholic church because it is very much a Catholic church made up of the universal church. You have yes. a huge immigrant community. Both the founders of the original, mm-hmm. of the beginning of Canada were immigrants themselves. But also today you still accept a lot of people from other countries, particularly asylum seekers.
Yes.
Talk to us a little bit about the Canadian church and what you will bring to the College of Cardinals as a representative of that church.
Well, our country is very diverse. We have, of course, the French-English dimension. We've also the native people, the First Nations, who have been there for long before people came from Europe. And that's a very important dimension of our life, especially I was very conscious of that as a bishop in Western Canada, but it's also true in Eastern Canada. And then we have people from the French tradition in Quebec, but also throughout Ontario and Alberta, where I was stationed, there's the French a reality as well. And then people more of the English language background. In the Archdiocese of Toronto itself, the original immigrants there were Irish, and people like my own ancestors came to that area. But we had many Italians and Portuguese in the early 20th century. Now there's just a very diverse reality. Because we're conscious of immigrants and refugees, the first settlers who were really, in many ways, refugees, I think it's important for the Archdiocese of Toronto to take that to heart very much. And so now we're facing Christians who are, or the reality of them being persecuted in many parts of the world. So it's a priority that I see is very important for our archdiocese, because we are safe. We are, you know, in an area where we aren't suffering what so many of our brothers and sisters are suffering, to be able to reach out to help them, above all, to help them stay where they are in their homeland, to live their Catholic faith with security and joy.
Would you be thinking in particular about the Christians from the Holy Land, from the Middle East?
Yeah, the Christians
countries.
In the Middle East are facing real problems, and the goal would be that they would stay in the Middle East, and that they have a right to stay there. This is their home. They've been there for 2,000 years. If it's impossible for some to stay because of the they cannot do that because they would be faced just a death, and you know, their homes have been destroyed and everything. And if they cannot stay there, then we want to give them a refuge in Canada. And so we have a very large refugee office that we've been increasing. I've been trying to ask individual parishes to sponsor refugees. And our hope is, too, that the community in Canada, once they arrive there, will then be able to support their brothers and sisters back home and maybe give them the support they need to be able to stay there.
That's just one aspect, however, of Canada, the Canadian Church. Another aspect is, of course, we cannot deny the fallen vocations. Mm-hmm. We cannot deny the fallen mass attendance. We cannot deny the fact that it is also one of the many countries in the Western world that is experiencing an almost aggressive secularism, which is mm-hmm. another very, very important topic to the current Pope, Benedict XVI. If I can just read you a quote from the president of the Canadian Conference of Catholic Bishops reacting to your appointment as Cardinal Designate, when he said that Cardinal Designate Collins has already provided excellent leadership for the Church in Toronto and throughout Canada by his dedication to and involvement in Lectio Divina, the quality of his preaching and his insistence on safe and secure environments in our communities for the vulnerable and the young. In another editorial in the National Catholic Register, they said that your appointment was very, very important because you find grace in authentic church teaching and in an increasingly secularized world, seemingly intent on pushing God to the sidelines. Collins, Cardinal Designate, mm-hmm. they didn't put that before yes. here, believes Christians should push back and society should embrace a loving and forgiving God in its daily life. Now that is mm-hmm. encapsulating new evangelization.
Yes, those are I think important points, especially the point that the church has different situations in around the world, but in the situation I face in Canada, and I think it may be similar to some degree in other parts, maybe Europe to some degree, and the United States, there is a kind of a form of secularism, which in which freedom of religion becomes freedom from religion. and a kind of a mindset which, in a sense, doesn't make much of a, you know, what kind of a contribution does it make to the broader society? Sort of wants to exclude the voice of religion, the voice of faith. Let it be excluded. Let it not speak in the public square. Let it stay back in a little home, shut the door, keep it away, keep it off the, you know, don't let it be appear in public. And I think that is not, I don't think that's right. I think we believers, and I speak of Christians, I speak of Catholic Christians, but I speak of also people of other faiths, people of faith, contribute to society. If you are sick, if you are on the streets in Toronto, if you are suffering, the hand reaching out to help you will almost certainly be motivated by faith, by religious faith. And we, therefore, we participate in the society in a very profound way. And that's not the only reason why we have a right to be heard, but it is one reason. And I think that we Christians and also believers of other faiths, I think that's true as well, need to be part of the democratic conversation. And we have every right to be present in that, and we need to do that. We should not be given the idea, so we should not accept the idea that our faith should be simply off in the side. It isn't a relevant issue. Our faith is a very relevant issue. And I think that people of faith, whether it be, like I just met a group of the Jewish community just a short time ago, fervent Jews, fervent Catholics disagree, obviously, on profoundly important issues, but we love and respect one another. And I remember I just after the, I met a good friend of mine who was a new friend of mine. We went off to a little coffee shop and I was sitting there. And there he had his kippah on as a Jewish, you know, and I was in my Roman collar, my thing. We're sitting having coffee and chatting away and had a great time together. And somebody came in who looked at us and said, Oh, this is a real amazing. I see a Jewish and Catholic priest talking together. And I said, well, not. We both looked at one another. Don't know what they meant, you know. So I think that the people who are really seem to be nervous are the secularists. They don't like these religious people. What's going on? And then they speak, of course, of how they're going to be, religious people be fighting one another. That's certainly not true in the situation I'm living in. It can be true, but then it's often caused by other factors, economic factors, where religion becomes a marker of a group in society, and then people fight on that thing. That can happen. But I think that it's also very real that believers work together and certainly contribute enormously to any society. So secularism in the sense of exclusion of religion is, I think, a dead end. It contributes nothing, and therefore that's not it. Secularism in the sense of this age, like as we used to say in Latin, per omnes secula secularum, for all the ages of the ages. That's all secular means is of this age. And in this age, the voice of faith is alive, it's vibrant, it's contributing, it's life-giving, and therefore it has every right to contribute to the whole of society.
Looking perhaps now as your role as a member of the College of Cardinals, the challenges that lie ahead of you, can you talk to us a little bit about taking on this universal role, this, you know, active part within the Universal Church?
Well, it is a challenge, I think. I've heard people, cardinals, speaking of how, you know, for one thing, there's just the traveling to Rome a fair bit for meetings. And that means you're away from your diocese more than in the past. Although Pope Benedict once said, I think it was when he was a cardinal, that the way a local bishop best serves the universal church is by serving his local church that's been entrusted to his care.
In fact, there's very few local bishops among this particular group. It's an important element to also underline, no?
Oh, that's true. They're different. This group, there's about half would be bishops who are directly working with the Holy Father in the Curia, but half are bishops like myself who are spiritual fathers of local communities. And so that's our prime responsibility. I think the Holy Father is very clear on that. But we also can bring a voice of an experience of a person who's caring for a family of faith, to be the spiritual father of a community, to be the shepherd of the flock in a local community. That's a perspective that's very important. And I think we kind of contribute to that, whatever discussions are held, that it's always good to have that voice present. And also the people who are assigned to the Curia here have that broader vision of they meet people like myself all the time in these ad limina visits. Every day they have 10, 15, 20, 30 bishops coming, speaking of the situations. They get that breadth of perspective, whereas the local bishops get the more focused perspective. And I think the two of them are complementary.
What would you then bring to the College of Cardinals as the biggest challenges facing the Universal Church today as a local bishop with that particular focus?
Well, I think the challenges are different depending largely on geography. I think in some parts of the church, the challenge is persecution. And they don't have a time in those situations to be quibbling about details of various things. They're facing dying for Christ. This is the fundamental witnessing to the Lord. And so that's a thing that, and that's very healthy for people in rather more comfortable countries to have, and it's a great enrichment for the Archdiocese of Toronto when you have people in your parishes whose relatives have been shot, you know, for Christ. It certainly wakes you up. It makes you, and it helps us in a more comfortable part of the church where our danger is rather to be corrupted by a kind of a cynical world or something like that. That type of a thing, it certainly sharpens us up when you're aware that the person next to you in the church is from a country where people are shedding their blood for Christ. So I think the two of them help. They help us to, and we in turn in our own way can help people, try to help people who are in that situation. In my own local area, we're not facing persecution. We're facing those. Some of the challenges, I think, again, this kind of idea that religious people should be to sort of behave themselves, be quiet, just don't speak up.
Keep their head down.
Don't bother, just if you want to pray, just go off to your churches and pray. But the key issues of life, the issues of life and death, the issues important that we don't perhaps have such a contribution to make. And I think that is just simply not true. And I think that we who do contribute enormously in those areas, I'm not speaking of having some kind of a theocracy where the church is dictating anything really. But we have a contribution to make. We have part of the picture. And I think we need to speak on issues. For example, euthanasia is becoming a big issue in my country and in other countries as well. That the sanctity of life from the first moment of conception to natural death, that's important. That's practical. It's real. It's human. And it is a place where we speak out, not for this or that political party. We don't want to get involved in politics in that sense, but on issues of importance of life and death and of all issues of justice. I think of the great Cardinal Manning, who's often overshadowed by Cardinal Newman. Newman is brilliant. Newman is spectacular. But Manning, especially in biographies of Newman, particularly because Manning had a terrible first biographer, and then he had an even worse one later on. But Manning, I'm just reading a little biography of him. You know, he was there with the dock workers who were suffering. He was there bringing them help. He was loved by the people. He wasn't the kind of cold political kind of careerist that he's often portrayed. Manning I think his personality was rather more reserved. But he was out there reaching out to people, and he influenced Pope Leo XIII very much in Rerum Novarum, the great social encyclical. My grandfather was very much involved in the cooperative movement. And in that sense that he was connected to a very good friend of Monsignor Moses Cody, who was in the Antigonish movement in Nova Scotia, one of the eastern provinces of Canada, who wrote a book called Masters of Their Own Destiny. He was dealing with workers who were sort of being used as pawns by the companies that control their lives. And said, no, we can put our own little money together and our own property, and we can live with dignity. And that's the social teaching of the church. I think that's also a thing we contribute.
My final question, because you're a very busy man, we're almost there, 2 days left to Saturday, but it has to be asked. Your call to the College of Cardinals is not the first time that Pope Benedict XVI has asked you or tasked you with a mission for the Universal Church. You were one of the visitors to Ireland. We know that the results of the visitation have yet to be really discussed by the Vatican, but can you just tell us about that experience of being asked to do such a very important job, not only for the Church in Ireland, but also for this pontificate where Pope Benedict has made the protection of minors within the church and the solution of the scandal of abuse a priority?
No, that was a very, very important mission that I received, and I was very, very involved in it for quite a period of time. I went over for about a week, first of all, to Ireland, to the Thurles and the Archdiocese of Cashel and Emily, and then I spent about over three weeks there in January of last year, listening to people, who had suffered, listening to the priests, the laity, the religious, attending meetings. So, for example, I was there at a time, it was not planned, it just was, I was there at a time when there was a group at the former seminary in Thurles, which were coming together to speak about how to protect young people in the society and the environment of the church, to be sure that that is done well. And that was one of the points that needed that was to be considered in the visitation, was how can we be sure that we've learned from this and that the procedures are in place to protect people in the future. Another key point was, is it real? Are we doing what needs to be done to reach out to people who have suffered in the past or in the present? You know, this. So looking at that, and so the whole experience was very intense, and I was very, I was edified by my experience of listening and being able to be there on behalf of the Holy Father. And I would many people, and at the end of each one, I'd simply on behalf of the Holy Father thank them for sharing their experience, their dimension of it, and encourage them in their faith and their life. Each situation is different. There are, it varies from place to place, and that's why it was good to have many different visitators rather than just one. And each one, and we didn't really coordinate our reports. We sort of each put the report in, and whoever they get them all, they can see the maybe a broader picture. So I found that to be very edifying, and I hope the piece that I contributed would be of help. At the end, we made many different recommendations. They all have gone in, and I would think that the I don't know what exactly the directions will be in that, but the Holy See has received all the different reports, I think, by now, and the new nuncio, Archbishop Brown, has begun his work in Ireland. And so we'll see what happens. And I think it will be a thing, as it was very stressed as we were doing this, very much stressed in preparing for it. We learn about one country which has its own unique issues and so on. But all of these experiences, we can learn something more universal for the good of the universal church, of how we can lead the way in being sure people are protected, young people, vulnerable people at any age too are protected. And then we can contribute to the broader society, because these problems, these issues of abuse are widespread within the whole of society. It is particularly horrible when people entrust their lives to the spiritual leadership and they find they are betrayed by that. So it's very, very appropriate and very understandable and right that people should be particularly appalled when people suffer at the hands of someone who's been called to serve them spiritually. But the realities, though, are much more universal. And I hope that as we have been able to learn through our mistakes in handling these things, and we've been trying to learn more and more through things such as the visitation, that we will be able not only to be sure that the church is this very, very safe for everyone, but that also we'll be able to share this knowledge and this wisdom gained through over these years with other organizations and other communities, and that it might be a benefit beyond the borders of the church.
If I may, can I ask, as you kneel there before mm-hmm. Pope Benedict on Saturday, what do you think will be going through your mind? I know it's an almost impossible question to answer. But
I don't know.
What prayers will you be bringing with you? What hopes will you be bringing with you?
Well, I don't know. It's hard to. It's just such a moving experience to think of being called by the Holy Father to be a cardinal, and to recognize the great reality, to recognize in the very spectacular color of the robes. It speaks of those, including those cardinals, who have shed their blood for Christ. And it speaks, I think, of the church in persecution, which is very, very, very real these days. And so I think that's the thing to keep one grounded in what really matters, the witness to Christ. I'm just reading right now a biography of John Fisher, the great saint, the great bishop at the time of Henry VIII, who was, just before he was executed by Henry VIII, was called a cardinal. And of course, Henry VIII was totally cynical about that. But I think that I would just simply pray that I will be good and faithful. I will do my best and ask the Lord's grace in this and ask the intercession of the great saints like St. John Fisher, like St. Charles Borromeo, who's a great hero of mine, that I might ask their intercession that they will be with me to pray that I be effective and be able to serve God's people as a cardinal.
Thank you very much, Cardinal-designate Thomas Collins, all the way from Toronto in Canada.
Thank you.
You're listening to Vatican Radio.